Welcome to the Near Post Local, football and futsal in the capital region, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. I'm Peter Funnell. Tonight's program is a beauty. But first, Canberra United. What a glorious start to the season. 4-1 victory over Perth Glory, and a really good win. Now this coming Saturday, they play Brisbane Roar at McKellar. Home game starts at 5 p.m. Go to the match, not to be missed. Get to McKellar, 5 p.m, Canberra United v Brisbane Roar. We're specials to win. Now Brickbat. At the Summer 20s, the canteen hasn't been open for a couple of weeks. What's going on? Last year the clubs did all the canteen work and it worked a treat. Barbecues the lot. This time I understand Capital Football was meant to be doing it. Well, they haven't done it. It's not as though the clubs are getting a whole lot of support out of Capital Football for this Summer 20s, and they're paying the best part of $2,000 a team for the privilege of competing. So let's lift the ante a bit. Capital Football, if you can't do it, negotiate with a club to do it so the patrons that are there can slip across and get a coffee or a drink and something to eat. The least we can do. The interview is with Roger Kua. He's a new addition to the Capital Football staff and a very important one. He's the futsal technical assistant. His brief is specifically to deal with the coach education and preparation of teams for the Nationals. And the subjects in tonight's interview are pretty wide-ranging, and I think if you like futsal, you'll find this very interesting. Roger's well qualified to comment on that. He was a futsal professional himself in Italy. But importantly, he has quite a number of things to say that are applicable right down to community level. The formations to be used. The use of the goalkeeper. Roger's a goalkeeper, so he's got a bit of interest in goalkeepers. Why throw long? Throw the ball to feet. Play from the back. Sound familiar? Well, it should. Give the players every opportunity to get as many touches on the ball and play the ball and understand the game. This aerial bombardment nonsense that's going on in junior futsal at the moment just has to stop. Even if we set up a local competition rule that says they can't throw the ball over halfway, something, anything to stop the silliness that goes on in too many games just at the moment. Trust the young players to get it right. Drop the ball out at the back and let them play. They'll get it right, and they'll play well. And the further they go in the season, the better they'll get. The interview that goes to air here is the shortened version. Go to the blog site for the podcast and you get a lot more content. Roger Kua, futsal technical assistant. This bloke is really worth listening to, and as he's on Capital Football staff, you ought to be making use of him and giving him a call. Let's get going. We're talking to Roger Kua. He's a new staff member at Capital Football and he's here for the purpose of futsal. How you going, Roger?
Very well yourself, Peter.
Not bad, mate. Now, I'll just fill you in briefly on Roger's background. He's originally from Victoria, came to Canberra at 11 years old. He's a student of Ndarra Marlin, definitely a local boy. And he's been playing futsal for 15 years and he's been an ACT rep player, started that about 12 years ago. Also moved to Victoria and played in the Victorian men's state team and the ACT men's team, and presently is playing in the New South Wales Premier League for the Mascot Vipers. They won the premiership last year, a pretty red hot outfit. And in that period from 2005 to 2008, Roger played in the Italian Futsal League, generally regarded as the second best league in the world. So you get the impression straight away that Roger sounds like he might know what he's talking about when it comes to futsal. But if that isn't good enough for you, Roger is a goalkeeper. They're an insane breed of player. He's laughing. You are. You're mad. You've got to be crazy to play. No, I won't say that bit. But importantly, Roger is the Futsal Roos goalkeeping coach. Coaching qualifications. He had a senior licence, and we'll talk about the coach education aspects of this. Roger's got some very good insights on. And I'll stop there. What have I missed, Roger?
That's it, mate.
That's it. Oh, no, I know it's not it. Okay, so Roger's a bit of a scoop for Capital Football and futsal in this region. Now, let's talk a little bit about your job at Capital Football. What's the brief?
Okay, Peter, I've been appointed with by Capital Football as technical futsal manager. Okay, mm-hmm. So my aim this year, obviously, and my position and my duties are actually to improve the coach education.
Okay, yeah.
Which is a main issue here within the ACT. Mm. And also with coach education, I think that's probably the weakest point within futsal within Australia. Yeah. Okay, so obviously if the coaches haven't got the right information, obviously the players aren't going to receive the correct information.
Mm. Just explain what the licensing arrangements are for futsal and the in Australia at the moment. You made some interesting comments off air that the listener out there just wouldn't be familiar with.
Okay, there are a lot of community courses, held by New South Wales, by Queensland, by Victoria, but they're not actually accredited. They're not accredited courses. The only accredited course is held once a year. It'll be held next year by the AFC, which will be held in Sydney. For any coaches to actually participate, they must have a minimum of a C license, football license. Which within Australia, I think there's only actual futsal coaches. I think there's only very minimal coaches that have got that qualification. And also, at this stage, the AFC might actually overrule that. Not all futsal coaches would need a C license.
Well, that's probably opened a few eyes out there, as the listener notes that. In those circumstances, therefore, we've got a fair way to go, haven't we? You've got a big job.
Yeah, like in regards to actually education and coach education within futsal itself, we haven't got that. We haven't got the, we'll say, resources that other countries have got. I just find in regards to coach education here within Australia, but especially here within the ACT, it's very, very limited.
Yep.
Very, very limited.
Yeah, we do struggle.
So, but as I said, I would encourage all futsal coaches or people actually wanting to be futsal coaches still to attend these community courses, even though that they aren't accredited. So it does not mean that you aren't going to receive the correct information.
Yep.
Okay. If you do want to pursue a career within futsal coaching, within that extra level coaching the futsal roos or coaching overseas, which within Asia and Europe, even third world countries now are professional in futsal, definitely attend the community courses, because it will give you that extra knowledge that other futsal coaches haven't got. So.
Yeah. And we just diverge here a bit. We puddle around here in our futsal as best we can, but we don't. Most of us don't see the rest of the world. And you just touched on a point there, and you've obviously played professionally yourself. It is big time sport in Europe and Asia now, isn't it, futsal?
Yeah, it definitely is. You find that unless you've actually experienced it and been over there, you don't realise how big it is. Even travelling with the futsal roos at the AFC Championships.
Yeah.
The amount of third world countries, we always complain that financially, but you're talking about third world countries that have started futsal professional leagues. One of the countries that recently started is Indonesia.
Yep.
Just feedback from their captain, he was actually discussing with me that players get minimum approximate $1,200 a month, which for them is an extreme amount.
Yeah.
And as I said previously, you're talking about a third world country. The thing is, we did beat Indonesia comfortably, but what people in Australia don't realise is that Asia, especially Asia, like Europe's so far advanced when it goes to futsal, but within Asia, they're taking those extra steps and Australia's taking extra steps backwards and we're just falling behind.
Is that right?
Yeah, so...
Why is that, mate? Why are we dropping off?
Well, obviously they're actually pursuing it like futsal, their coach education, their and development.
Yeah.
Okay. Financially, their football federations are getting behind them.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
which makes a big difference. Yep. Okay, and obviously you have to realise also is the main issue outside of football is the population of these countries also. Mm. Is that obviously we've got a smaller population compared to Asian countries. Mm. Our main sports are, you know, for instance, Aussie rules, rugby league, rugby union,
yeah,
then football, then you know, basketball, then futsal maybe.
Yeah.
You know, so in that aspect, when it goes to our population, we can't really compete with Asia.
Mm.
And one aim of mine this year is to actually try and get as many players overseas playing professionally.
Mm.
I've got two players that I'm waiting a response back from the Q80 Professional League,
yeah,
in futsal to get them over there.
Mm.
Obviously, because we haven't got a professional league,
yeah,
the main issue is to try and get as many players playing overseas professionally.
Yeah.
So when it does come to the AFC Championships or World Cup qualifiers, we have taken an extra step.
And that's a good living wage, is it, that professional?
Oh, thing? Excellent. In Europe itself, you know, I was playing with players that were getting €8,000 a month.
Wow.
€10,000, and that's, you know, I wasn't getting nowhere near that. But as I said, you know, I got housing, so, and I was living with... it happens all, you know, within Italy, is that all foreign players actually house with other players from overseas.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And we get a monthly wage, and plus we get a food allowance.
Mm, mm.
And you get more than, some players actually get much more than a normal job here within Australia.
My goodness. So, yeah, and that brings us to the next step. So let's just step it to Europe.
Yeah.
Because you've seen all this and experienced it. As a player, and as the Futsal Roos goalkeeping coach, so you're seeing it from two levels. Well, you're getting two perspectives on this. When you go into Europe, I mean, that's a big step up again, isn't it, in the European countries?
Yeah, of course it is, and obviously playing in the Italian National Futsal League, mm, the difference is that you train every day. But also you're around professional players. And yeah, when I talk about professional players, I'm not talking about that they're, tactically, technique, they're gifted. What I'm talking about is the actual person themselves.
Yeah.
In Italy, 90% of players are Brazilian.
Is that right?
Playing in the Italian National League.
Wow, okay? I didn't know that.
And it used to be, once the Italian national side used to be all Brazilian. Because obviously, with a lot of Brazilians, have got an Italian background,
yes, yeah,
so they were legible with their passports. So yeah, so playing with these players coming from a third world country, you find that in regards to respect and their attitude,
mm,
was just really, really up to that level where you could say, compared to Australians or coming from a population of 300 million, they know that they will fight for that position and they've got, yep, that attitude and. Mm. And they'll do anything to fill that position.
Mm.
Here in Australia, we haven't got that mentally. We haven't got that strength, like saying, okay, yep. Because we know that tomorrow we're going to go and work, or tomorrow we're going to go surfing, or tomorrow we're going to...
Yeah.
You know, in a way you could say that we're spoiled. Mm. But playing with these players overseas, you really see the hunger that they've got for the sport.
But that sharpens up your attitude.
Yeah, it does, especially, you know, it really does. And playing, and also, you know, playing in the Italian Futsal League, you know, in Serie A, when I was playing with, you know, international players, some of the coaches that actually coached me were not only some of the best within Europe, but within South America. And one of the coaches was Ruiz Diaz, which is a Paraguayan national coach.
Mm.
And he's also a Spanish Cup champion, which he won there. And obviously... the Spanish league's the best in the world, and you're talking about a coach that's coached, you know, so many, you know, that's achieved a lot.
Jeez. Well, let's jump aside to the other cross side of the world, to the Americas. Big time futsal in the Americas, isn't it, down in South America?
Well, of course it is, and within South America itself, Peter, is that obviously it's a third world country, as I stated before, and regardless of how much they get paid.
Mm.
They know that if they don't want that position, there's 100 million other people that will take that position, yeah, and that's why they're so hungry and they're so successful.
Jeez, it's terrific, isn't it? Now, I don't know. I've never actually had anyone speak about futsal in the African subcontinent. Have you encountered that when you've been playing? Certainly football.
I haven't. They actually, a lot of, now they're actually well and developed within futsal. A lot of the African countries, and actually they've got, they also participate in the World Cup qualifiers.
Yeah.
They actually, a few of the teams, the second biggest tournament is to the World Cup is a Grand Prix tournament, which is held by Brazil.
Yep.
And that was just held now, and I think there was two African nations that actually attended that.
Oh, okay.
I think it was Zambia or Libya that actually lost to Italy, 2-0.
Oh, wow, so that's not much.
Yeah, so it just shows that their level, you know, of a commitment and their skill level. So.
Wow. Okay, we've certainly navigated the globe, mate. But I think the listener will have picked up that Roger's been out there and done that and travelled the globe, so he's a man that's experienced in futsal in a way that we don't see very often in the ACT, and that's terrific for us. Now, back to your job. So your job is to enhance the technical development of the game and
yes,
particularly focused on coach education.
That's correct.
Now, specifically you pick up the campaigning of the teams by age for the Nationals, don't you?
That's right.
So tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so my main duty within the Capital Football is obviously I'm the technical manager, but only for the ACT representative squads that actually participate in the FFA Futsal National Championships.
Yep.
Okay, so one of my main duties obviously is to obviously, as I already have, appoint the correct and most qualified coaches for each age group.
Yep.
Okay. That was done obviously with a one-on-one interview with all coaches, just a state of what level they're at in regards to futsal. So I'm actually will be doing a court session with all coaches in regards to a training program. So it'll be hands-on, which I've actually planned out for all of them. This is just part of obviously coach education, but also other aspects of futsal, I think that and my position that I'll be looking at is just also participation, because I feel that there've been a lot of the numbers have been down this year in regards to participation
for the trials at the Nationals.
Yes,
is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. So I think that could be either financially or people just not happy with past achievements, you know, in regards to the way it's been run or
whatever.
So yeah, that's exactly right. So. It's unfortunate, but obviously, because we haven't got the population and we aren't one of the most dominant sports, we have to try and keep as many kids participating in the sport.
We certainly do. Now, so you've appointed the coaches. Have you got enough coaches at the right level for each of the age groups now?
Yes, I have. In one aspect that I want to point out to a lot of coaches is that it doesn't necessarily mean that if you're the most long-serving or you think that you've got the most knowledge within futsal, you'll be coaching you know, one of the higher age groups. Me personally, my most we'll say most experienced futsal coach, I'd be hoping that they would want to take the position of a under 11.
Yeah.
and that's obviously due to and development.
Absolutely.
So yeah, you know,
that's the time to get them.
That's exactly right. So, but yeah, but like, so I have appointed I've only appointed head coaches and I've only actually appointed assistant coaches where I know we actually benefit the sport. So yes. I'm not going to appoint parents or people that for instance, just want to do it for 1 year, or I want to make sure that in regards to and developing the sport, it's going to benefit futsal. So what I have, I've only appointed futsal coaches that obviously I know that are going to be here long term. So.
Yep.
Doesn't necessarily mean that they've got a futsal background.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And of course, the reality is that there's been so little coach education, we'll get onto that in a minute, that for a lot of people, catching up on anything formally has just been not been doable.
No, that's exactly right.
Now, in terms of the Nationals, and this is a constant debate, how competitive should we expect our teams to be at the Nationals by age?
It depends on how much commitment, how much training, and obviously how much coach education the coaches have got. So it depends on a lot of areas. You can't just expect, okay, how come, you know, let's, you know, obviously because of our past, we ACT has been successful.
Mm.
We can't just depend on that. I mean, we just can't rely on that saying, okay,
no,
yeah.
No, you're absolutely right. Yeah.
So, but it takes you know, obviously a commitment from the players, commitment from the coaches, obviously, mm. obviously coming back to coach education
mm.
and the amount of time and training.
Yep. And just to pick that point up, I know your focus is at the Nationals and in the technical development coach education. One of the things that stands out, I think, is that our levels of futsal, competitive levels of futsal, are only in probably the last couple of years started to refine with the Premier League, and that's drilled right. down to Youth Premier League and so on. Whereas if we look to New South Wales, which you're highly familiar with, you're playing in it still. There's a Premier League, a Super League, and boy, don't they play at every age group. A club plays a club, it's red hot.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Peter. I think it just comes back to the passion of the sport.
Yeah.
You've got their Super League and their Premier League, and they actually, you know, they're trying to take that extra step and trying to be a professional.
Yeah.
And that's just by the players attending in all age groups, even the younger age groups mm. attending with their uniforms and they've actually got training, mm. you know, two times a week and also they've got their own websites and so forth.
Yeah.
Is that none of our clubs have actually got that here within the ACT?
No. Well, we only really have North and South Canberra futsal, which doesn't really do it. With one exception, and you probably know about it, but for the listener, might have picked it up in previous interviews, there's a really inspired bit of development here with Eddie Senator and Tristan Collins put together the Boomerangs Futsal
Yes, Sala, that's correct.
And they're now campaigning in the Super League at the required age groups. And if anyone had got out to Tuggeranong last Saturday and seen this thing, seen the first game kick off at 12:15 and the thing go all the way through till dark as all the games are going, they got a lot of people attending. It's quite a surprising. But it's of a standard that, as a general comment, is a standard we generally don't see here in our own domestic competitions.
No.
They really play hard every game.
No, that's right, Peter. It's just the actual step of futsal that New South Wales is taking.
Yeah.
And obviously, I think it's great for us here in the ACT, to see that and for our players to actually compete in that.
Yeah.
Because obviously, we aren't going to get that here in our local leagues, unfortunately.
No, we can't.
But I think it's great that we have got the Boomerangs, regardless of the actual results.
Yep.
I think it's great that we are participating in the Super League.
Mm.
And obviously taking the extra step to the Premier League, I think it's going to really benefit ACT.
Yeah, I think so too. And what we've just tracked across there is, pick your point up, is putting steps in so that we build the competitive nature of the sport and the attitude to it.
Yeah, that's exactly right, Pete. I think that we, not only here within the ACT, but within Australian futsal, we really just have to change our attitude towards it. And I think the players... The thing, honestly, Peter, that really frustrates me is that here in ACT especially, to represent, and I know this is probably a big call, but to represent ACT in futsal was always an easy way to represent ACT in sport.
Yeah.
And one of the things that really, really frustrate me here in the ACT is that coming back to ACT and some of the phone calls that I've received in regards to, I actually received a phone call in regards to, doesn't matter what age group or who it was, or was it she or he, this person said to me, rings me up and says, you know, I've played in the ACT representative squads for so many years, can I join on the final squad? And I said, listen, in the past we... You know, you might have done that. And she goes, yeah, but I've always played for ACT and I did it last year too. I didn't have to actually train.
Oh, I didn't want to do the training and the work.
Yes, and they said, can I join?
Come on.
And it just frustrates you. I said, I don't know, but I said, things have changed. And I said, if you, as any other ACT representative sport,
yeah.
you must obviously to get considered for selection, you must obviously attend the training.
That's disrespecting the game.
Oh, of course it is. And this person, you know, obviously, and then obviously even yesterday, just getting a phone call, so if someone could put their name down, so if they could be selected, and I said, listen, obviously, you know, you must go through a selection process.
Correct.
You know, so, and this is why, and I feel like it, and always happens, there's always players saying, yeah, but I've represented NACE 10 the past years, but I didn't have to, you know, participate in the training, you know, the train on squad prior to the final squad. So, but unfortunately, yeah, and this is why that I'm just trying to eliminate all that.
Yeah, good.
And so, yeah, because if this was actually in any other states, and you know, and this is why.
Would you get away with that in New South Wales?
Well, last year I actually made the New South Wales, because we won the state titles, I made the New South Wales squad, actually. I got invited to participate. And obviously, because I couldn't, because due to, I actually coached the under-16s Cobras last year, boys, I couldn't attend training session. And obviously, and the head coach was the Australian Futsal Roos coach, and he goes, Roger, listen, if you can't actually attend, I can't consider you. And I said, yep, that's fine.
Well, there you go. How simple is that?
And that's fine, and it's
straight
just,
up and down.
Exactly right.
Can't be any confusion about that. I mean, oh, I don't know, it makes you scratch your head, but it's a hell of a good policy to have. I mean, you'll know whether there's an exceptional case, like someone's been in a car accident or something
exactly
like that.
Exactly right.
But we're talking about exceptional cases. We're not talking about people trying to backdoor the process.
Exactly right.
And getting that right takes all the mates rates stuff out of the game, and where the younger players are concerned, I know for sure that's something that parents are really sensitive to.
Yeah, it is.
And you know, and sometimes obviously the parents will try it on, and if they get the door shut, then their kids will go down the right path and not the one that doesn't help anyone.
That's exactly right, Peter.
That's great. Look, well, that's very heartening. Can't disrespect the sport. That's just not on. Now, little coach education stuff for we community coaches out there, Roger, that grapple with this. When you're coaching a team, and let's just take a broad view across the age groups. Yep. Let's just say, pick the nationals ages. Yep. We'll pick the players up from 11 going forward. The first issue a coach has is, what formations do I play them? Can you just speak to that whole issue of formation?
Yeah, of course. Now in regards to formations, a lot of people, I'll be honest, they get confused with this 2-2 and 3-1 and, you know. What you must take into consideration, okay, in the younger age groups, probably 11, 12, you want to start just with a simple 2-2.
Yep.
So then they get their zoning right and their positioning right. That's the main thing.
Yep.
Now, overseas, okay, With these formations of 2-2 and, you know, 3-1 and so forth, they don't use them anymore. They'll probably commence with them and they'll probably last for about 30 seconds or so.
Yeah.
But then everyone goes into individual coverage.
Yeah, just explain that.
Okay, individual coverage means that obviously because it means just man to man, but obviously you still keep your zone, but obviously you just go man to man. Okay, the reason for that because the sport has become extremely quick.
Yep.
Okay, they find that overseas the best format is they actually call it mixed. Okay, so you start off with a formation of 2-2 maybe, but mostly it's done 3-1, and then obviously you just go into individual coverage, and obviously this is due to the speed of the game.
Yeah.
Okay, and this is what obviously at that level, obviously overseas that we're using, but obviously here in Australia within the younger age groups. Because that obviously becomes, because you're professional, physically, you must be extremely fit.
Yeah.
Okay? Obviously do individual coverage. And because obviously the overseas, the league's all professional, that comes into account. Here in Australia, we might just find that a bit difficult at that stage because we aren't professional. But as I said, with the younger age groups, I'll definitely, they would obviously start with just a 2-2 format.
And that little bit of structure helps them work out where they've got to be initially.
Of course it does. Obviously, and that just comes back to coach education.
Yep.
Obviously, if the coach can obviously demonstrate why obviously just to do a 2-2 yep. formation, mm. okay, which is just to hold your zone and hold the ball. Okay, this is obviously going to teach the child, mm. okay, at such a young age, obviously positioning,
mm.
okay, even technical stuff such as defense,
mm.
okay, faking, passing,
yep.
you know, all these little things that at such a young age groups that they aren't taught.
Yep. Now, if we just come forward to that, you then the other formation that was put round here is diamond formation.
Yes.
We're going to go to diamond formation. Can you talk about that?
Okay. Well,
just to draw a picture for the listener out there, because we're talking pictures.
Okay.
Here.
Now it's a lot. So with all these formations, like there are a lot of people that talk about these formations but don't actually know what they actually mean or yep. what to actually how to use them. Okay.
Yeah. yeah.
Now if you're talking about diamond formation,
diamond when?
Okay. So if you're talking about diamond formation, you can talk about having obviously your pivot, which is obviously at the top of,
yep.
of your half, and then you've got your two flanks,
yep.
and then you've got your target.
Yeah.
Okay, that can either be used in offensive or defensive.
Yeah.
If you're talking about defensive, because that's where they usually talk about it as a diamond, okay. Mm. A diamond shape, for instance, if your flank, yeah. okay, your wing, mm-hmm. okay, which people refer to also,
yeah.
if the opposition have got the ball, okay, yeah. then obviously you're going to have a player that's going to mark the wing,
yeah.
okay. Even though that the opposition might have a player sitting on top of their defensive half, okay, mm. your teammate should actually drop down, okay, yeah. to cut out any middle pass,
yeah.
okay, regardless yeah. of where the opposition player is on top, yeah. because as I said, he's not going to have any effect because he's still in the top
of the diamond's dropping back down,
exactly,
getting closer to getting behind the line of the ball,
exactly. Then obviously. Then the player and the reason for that, okay, because if the flank beats your teammate,
yeah.
it's quicker recovery time
yeah.
for that player to recover to cover
yeah.
the player that has just been beaten.
Yeah.
So people just must realise why are we doing this formation? Why am I in this position? Because they might find, hey, it's not effective, but you have to realise obviously the actual
how you play it.
Exactly right. And the reason why you're actually in that position. It's a bit hard to explain that, actually.
No, that's cool. But so, because this is the issue I've noticed with some coaches that are trying to put it in. I said, we're going to play a diamond formation, and everyone can draw a pretty picture, but the next thing that follows is, we're defending. So how does the diamond react to the loss of the ball?
That's exactly right. And that's why people must get the actual diamond. It's quite simple, because the closest player to the player marking the wing or the flank is actually more situated in a player that has got time to recover but also cuts out the pass.
Yes.
Okay. Regardless of, as I said previously, where his opponent is. Then obviously, then you've got the bottom point of the diamond, which is just obviously in line.
Yep.
Okay, with the top point, okay,
yep,
which is marking the flank.
Yep.
Okay, and obviously then you've got point or the other player should be obviously on the other flank,
yep,
marking his opponent. So so everyone's in a position, if their player does get beaten, they obviously it can recover to cover the actual
And that probably is a first best clue to all of us are ordinary coaches. You're going to use a diamond, and the ball turns over. The top of that diamond has to travel quickly back down that centre channel, so they can do any recovery.
That's defending. Exactly right.
In football terms, they can start playing second defender.
Yeah, exactly right. And people, I suppose, with the diamond shape, are a bit unaware due to the fact. Because the first thing that they think about is, okay, I'm leaving my player.
Yeah.
Okay, but obviously in that circumstances, obviously if you leave your player and you go to the player, obviously the closest your closest teammate to you should cover your player.
Could shift, yeah.
Okay, so and obviously then they go, yeah, but what about the last opponent?
Mm.
Well, obviously that's when the goalkeeper comes into it.
Yep.
And obviously plays as a fifth player.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So once again, all this comes as coach education, and obviously just to be, you know, and I honestly think that court sessions or module sessions are the best training sessions for coaches to have.
Are they ever? And absolutely right. And you, those court illustrations then allow everyone in slower time to ask the questions that are needling them about, because everyone's
exactly
making
right.
connections in their head at a different rate in a different way. And I just pick up that. So we lost the ball. Those reactions from the diamond have occurred. Bing. We win the ball back, let's say, on the flank, on the right flank. What's the diamond do then?
Okay, well, that's... well.
What's that... in that moment of transition, what happens with the diamond?
Okay, now, your top two players... Mm. Okay, this is where also where coach's knowledge will come in. Your top two players of the diamond, sorry.
Mm.
So, obviously, if you do gain the ball, obviously, in this core press...
Yep.
Okay, your top two players should be the fastest...
Yeah.
In your team.
Yep.
Okay, or fastest on the court.
Yep.
Okay, so obviously, if you do gain the ball in that position, okay, obviously, this court press, you're too fast, obviously, you're too, regardless of how many opponents that they have got, okay, because in that instinct, you should have a 2-on-1.
Yeah, with any luck.
Okay,
yeah.
You should have a 2-on-1. And obviously, that's when you all obviously push up and so forth, and you should be attacking the goal. You shouldn't be looking back and setting up. You should be obviously court pressing towards the goal, and obviously...
Well, that's defending high and getting a turnover high. What if it happens if you get the turnover ball back to you in say, your defensive third?
Well, in regards to within your half, you should be taught pretty much to obviously play the ball and in a rotation, play the ball and go, play the ball and go.
Mm.
So... you find that overseas, what they actually do is that see, a lot of teams overseas have been taught either to press, or to let the opponent to come in their defensive half, to actually
win it back.
Exactly, because they're thinking, okay, people are thinking, but aren't you obviously letting the opponent to gain obviously space and obviously court and so forth? Well, no, you're not, because obviously. Them playing in your half, you actually limited their space, and it's a better opportunity for you to actually for them, because the majority of goals are scored by opposition error in your defensive half.
Yeah.
And so, but in that regards, if you've got the ball in your defensive half, obviously you should be taught like rotation in regards to just the 2-on-2 or. Obviously, and this should just be pass and go, pass and go.
Yeah.
So
there's that magic word, rotation. And what we've just been saying there is that we were using a diamond to press and to defend, but the moment we won the ball back, let's say we won it back deep in our half, now we're trying to receive pass move, and we're rotating this. Focus on that word rotating. This is a really interesting one.
Okay, so in regards to rotation, when a team rotates,
doesn't
mean that they're running around.
No, that's right.
So what they're actually doing is that they're actually passing.
They're not spinning like a top, no.
So it's a rotation where you've got a player passing the ball, the player that has just passed the ball runs into space.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Gives space for himself.
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously gives space now for the player with the ball.
Yes.
Okay. And then runs into another position, giving him an option to pass.
He doesn't run into space and drag a defender to the ball receiver.
Exactly right. So what he's actually doing, he's running into space, he's taking his player with him.
Yep.
Okay, which allows a player with the ball an option pass, or it's giving him that extra space. So what they actually try and do, they actually try and make space for him within the centre. Mm. So what they do, so a lot of players, what they actually do, they actually run in the centre, then after they'll check back.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's taking his opponent or her opponent out of the game, and which actually gives more space and time for the player with the ball.
Could I ask you, certainly in the younger age groups, the moment the ball's won back, they'll all head north like the swallows, and they're effectively almost with their back to the ball player. Their runs are too long, too impatient to get to the other end. So what you're saying is receive, pass, then move, but you're not necessarily moving a whole lot of distance.
No, No, a lot of people, teams actually have been taught just to move into, to actually do a rotation within their own defence, to keep the ball in their own defence for a few rotations, and obviously then create actually...
A maybe.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just a lot of people actually do a set plays from a rotation.
Yes.
And from a defence to an offensive.
Mm.
Which I've actually put in the training program, which is quite simple, and actually gives them a goal, you know, a scoring opportunity.
Yep.
You know, and it's just extremely simple, which obviously here we haven't been taught. So
no, we haven't. And if you wanted to know where the problem starts, just go down and watch North or South Canberra futsal at the younger age groups, and the moment the ball's run back, it's like someone fired a shotgun. The kids have gone off to all four corners of the court. Without necessarily knowing where they're going, and that can be fixed, it seems to me, with kids. Just get them not to go so far, and to turn and face.
Exactly right.
But the other thing is, I don't know whether you agree with this, but they say rotation is really hard to teach. But with the younger kids, they just seem to me to do it naturally if you don't interfere too much. In football, they own positions,
that's right.
They tend to bring that across to futsal. What's a different game, eh?
Yeah, well, I just feel that.
How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I just feel that. Obviously, it's all about just coach education. Like I know I was referred to that, but it's just the way the coach delivers information.
Yeah,
and the way he delivers it. Yeah, you know, with the younger age group, you don't have to be so tactical in regards to okay. Let's do this movement or this movement, or you know, you just have to stick to the basics. Even if the rotation just is such an easy, simple basic, okay, yeah. Just the main thing is to teach kids basics of futsal. You don't have to be too tactical about it in regards to okay, you have to do four rotations. You know, teach them one rotation, simple.
Yeah,
But like I said, you know, I think that and looking back at Brazilians, okay, the reason why they're so successful in football, it's not because of football for futsal, it's actually futsal for football.
Ah, good point.
Okay, yeah, so really, obviously as everyone knows, but now things have changed also in Brazil, but all players only played futsal until about 14, 15, and then they were actually introduced, they were allowed to play football.
Yeah.
But now obviously in Brazil that's even changed because now they're all introducing their... juniors and so forth.
They've got football. Different habits, these players, don't they?
Yeah, they do. They do. Obviously, I think a big benefit, as I say, for the Brazilians is obviously playing futsal. Mm. And obviously everyone knows that. So, but it's a way they've actually looked at it and influence. Mm. So, no one can ever say that football has been an influence for them for futsal in regards to their tactical technique, you know?
No, I'd say... Look, I don't know how the listener feels out there. I find it a positive hindrance because when the young players come out of a football season, they'll expect to own positions.
Yeah, that's exactly
and,
right.
And you say, well, no. The simple notion for me of rotation is move into the next best space.
That's exactly right.
Do the job that appears.
That's exactly right.
And you couldn't quite map it all the time, but it... And the other thing that was pointed out to me a long time ago by Maurizio Marche was everyone attacks and everyone defends.
That's exactly right.
I just think that's one of the most powerful things for recommendations for futsal as a game.
That's exactly right. Here we're taught to be either flank or pivot or target, but our overseas actually what's known as a universal player, which means pretty much you know how to play every position.
Makes sense though, doesn't it?
That's right.
Yeah, it makes sense because the speed at which futsal's played, you'll wind up anywhere at any time.
That's exactly right.
Now, something else I wanted to ask you about.
Yeah, of course.
When I watched the Boomerangs playing in the Super League last weekend, a point really was emphasised in my mind, and both clubs were playing, and as soon as they got the ball out from the back, they were playing out from the back. They were, when they threw the ball, the goalkeeper, the GK, threw the ball, it was always tactical. It wasn't just for the sake of relocating the game. If they were in a muddle, occasionally they might try and relocate the game, but again, that was tactical. All other times, drop the ball forward, left, right, and start the play, always ball to feet. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, obviously being a goalkeeper, I was never... I was taught you should only throw the ball over halfway, only on certain occasions. And it wasn't... One of the occasions was not if the opponent had a shot and it was goalkeeper's ball to actually throw the ball. You know, I was always taught to actually look at the easiest option.
Yep.
Okay, go up to the other side of the D and deliver it to my left or right defender flanks.
Yeah.
Okay. That's the first option, and the reason why is because you should actually teach your side. Okay, I know throwing the ball over halfway is the easiest option and probably safest. Yeah. Okay, but if you're trying to teach a team technically, you know, from defensive to offensive, especially for the younger age groups, they should never be taught that.
Yeah.
Okay, because tackling from your defense to offensive, especially for the younger age groups, obviously they're learning. You know, technique in regards to, you know, passing the ball and obviously, and then tactically, you know, like in regards to if you want to get him into rotation and so forth. So, no, I don't agree with that. You know, if the only time I was ever taught to throw the ball over halfway was obviously in a court press. You know, if we gained the ball from a goalkeeper save or... And obviously, automatically, I would expect my two flanks to start running. And I wouldn't have to look. I would automatically throw it.
Yeah.
Okay. And obviously, if that opportunity does come up, you've got a one-on-one with your target and the defender, you can. But obviously, in majority of cases, no, I wouldn't.
But that's a very specific tactical purpose, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And certainly in the junior futsal, just at the moment, now the rule changes have come along and they can't kick the skin off it up the other end, which they did last season, probably the season before. Now we're tending to see too many long, loopy throws. And look, could I just put this to you? As an expert in this, surely if the kids are going to get better, they've got to have more touches on the ball.
Yeah, of course.
It's self-evident fact, really, isn't
that's
it?
That's exactly right. As I said previously, you know, if you want to improve the children, especially at a younger age, technically and tactically, obviously, you aren't going to do it by them not touching the ball. And
that's
the
right.
Ball.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously, they, you know, it's not about at that age group. Yeah, okay, I know winning for, you know, probably parents more than children is important, but at that age group and to be successful. It's about education for the children. It's about them gaining knowledge of the sport and actually teaching them. So yeah. So regardless, like me personally, if as a coach, if I knew that I could win a game by throwing the ball 100 times to my target, okay, because I knew that he would score every time. Or would I prefer to throw it on the ground and maybe lose? You know, for a young age group, I'd prefer to lose, but I know that they're learning tactically and technique, rather than constantly. So it's not about winning and winning. You know, it's about children and education in regards to the sport. So.
Oh, I think that's well said. Look, one other thing I'd say about these long throws, as I watched just last night, and there's some good young players going around and. And there's this aerial bombardment, and it's typically with the young player, once one team starts, the other team starts. It's like a disease, and it develops a life of its own. But those long, loopy throws take a lot of collecting, and a lot of hang time in the air. They've got to be received well at the other end. Lots more touches to get them under control, and it just seemed to me that whatever advantage a lot of them thought would happen. Was negated by the fact that the defenders were piling back in numbers to get back to where this thing was going to land. I just didn't see the point, because I'm figuring, as a goalkeeper and goalkeeper coach yourself at the highest level, I'm figuring that little scenario you talked about where you looked up and you knew your two flank players would be automatically trying to exploit the flanks and get wide and go forward, my figuring is that your throw is loopy, it's low and fast and allows pick up on the sole of the foot or a touch on.
Yeah, like obviously when obviously and delivering the ball and being taught, always make sure that my distribution is always obviously the ball must always be placed to make sure it receives in front of the actual player, not behind him, because obviously he has to stop. So you make sure obviously, but obviously I wouldn't obviously it's more power and accuracy and not as high, because obviously you want to make sure the ball gets delivered as quick as possible.
Yeah.
I think that a perfect person obviously is for his distribution is Angelo. Goalkeeper,
The
men's goalkeeper. So I think, and also
you see him in the Premier League.
Yes, and also current, also Futsal Roos, also goalkeeper. So he's probably a perfect example where he does it perfectly. Anywhere else within Australia, I'll be honest, it's just quite hard to find. It really is. It really, because no one's been taught. You know, and obviously I'm interested in that process. You know, obviously. Mm. You know, teaching obviously the other goalkeepers obviously in regards to distribution. So.
Well, that highlights the point that although the younger goalkeepers are now strong enough to hoist the ball in the air, they're not strong enough to distribute it at that distance.
That's exactly right.
With that low power. One other thing technically I want to ask you about.
Yes.
Control under the sole of the foot.
Yes.
Terribly important in futsal, yeah?
Yeah, it is. Obviously control.
Unlike football, in fact, football coaches will often castigate a young player for taking control.
Yeah, it is. In regards to control at the sole of foot, they have to know when, like as a target.
Yeah.
Obviously, you would, because obviously you want to obviously plays running off and so forth. Yeah. But as I said, if I'm running actually on an angle, that's when you could also use just the top of your foot or also the side of your foot to actually control the ball. So you don't have to always, but in a lot of cases you would want to control the ball with the sole of your foot, because obviously more control. That also depends on your position and also in regards to where you are positioned.
Well, we're getting near the end of this. This is most interesting, and I think the listener out there will realise we've got a real futsal expert here resident in the Capital Football staff, and I reckon you ought to be thinking about how you're going to make use of this. Maurizio Marche, who's very experienced, well known to you, a futsal coach from Brazil, and had worked in Australia a fair bit, in response to a question put by a coach in my hearing one day, said, the coach said to him, well, what should I concentrate on? And he was talking about, I think it was around about 11, 12s and 13s and 14s. It's sort of that age group. And he said, what should I concentrate on the, you know, in terms of developing my players? And Maurizio said, I think you can spend the whole season on receive, pass, move.
That's exactly right. If overseas, we've got.
What's your reaction to that?
Oh, I think it's
sort of summed it up.
Exactly where it's coming from, because one of the best coaches in South America and Europe was one of my first coaches, and as a whole, he said to us, he goes, if you don't know how to pass a ball, what am I going to teach you?
There you go.
Yeah. So, which sums it up.
Yeah, it does.
So
right.
If you can't pass a ball, you won't be able to tackle. You won't be able to score. You won't be able to do any tactical training. So but no, it's perfect. It's exactly right. So
you got a big job in front of you, mate.
Yeah, I do.
And the Nationals are just starting to crank up now the preparation for the various teams.
Yeah,
this would be good. And when are you thinking of running your first court session for the coaches for the Nationals?
The court session for the prior to the will probably be within 2 weeks.
Okay.
Because actually, this program will go out to them prior to the final squad training, which will be selected on the 10th of November, and they start training on the 14th of November.
Right.
So the court session will be held prior to the 14th.
Mm.
And then obviously prior to that, I'll be doing just goalkeeper training for the selected goalkeepers
for the ACT
side. So they'll be
That's outstanding.
So it's just to give them just a better understanding and in regards to the positioning. It's not about, you know, about just saving a ball. It's it's about the way you position yourself and so forth.
Oh, such a valuable asset. So that fifth player dimension is so important.
Yeah, it is. Even though with the new rule taken out, a goalkeeper should be, because it, obviously with the new rule, you know, it's got no effect on distributing the ball with your hands.
No, absolutely.
So and the goalkeeper should also be taught to still play with his feet, regardless.
Yeah,
because one simple pass could obviously be intercepted by offensive and they could score from a goalkeeper error. So, yes.
So, there you go. We've got a whole new dimension to our futsal preparation now. This is great. Roger, it's been a pleasure meeting you.
I'm sure we'll
talk again as this goes forward. And more power to futsal, I reckon.
Thank you very much. And I'd like to thank North and South Canberra Futsal. Obviously, and thank you very much for this, Peter. Really appreciate it.
No problem, mate. I'll see you around.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Near Post Local on 2XXFM, where too much football or futsal is never likely to be enough. Football and futsal in the capital region. Go to the podcast for this program at www.nearpostlocal.blogspot.com. You will find a lot of interesting interviews and items there for the discerning football or futsal tragic. Enjoy your futsal and football. See you next time. Ta-da. Every day I